or the stream, or the rebut. But a lot of people have been alienated by... Whoa, that was loud. Russ Belville.
This is another video on the religious use of cannabis. This is the second broadcast that I'm responding to that Keith has made, and one was just for normal, the second was for Time for Hemp, and with Casper Leach. So anybody who wants to learn more about this or listen to the whole show, you can go to www.time4hemp.com, timeforhemp.com. And, you know, it's an important topic. I think it affects a lot of people, and that's why I'm responding for probably the sixth or seventh time in history of, you know, normal broadcasting about this, including stuff that Russ Belville has said about Roger Christie. This is probably, I don't know, at least five or six times that I've responded to this, and I'll continue to respond as long as it continues to be an issue. Anyway, I hope you get a chance to listen to the whole broadcast. Got a couple of different clips here.
Keith, speaking of stealing thunder from people working hard to make a difference, we talked before the show, so anybody out there listening, I want everybody to know this is not a surprise question. I don't do that to people I love. Keith is somebody who I admire. He's one of my mentors and my heroes. But apparently, there's a big brouhaha stirring about Normal's stance on religious use. Many people feel like Normal is throwing Roger Christie and the medical movement under the bus, that they don't recognize it as being legitimate, and that perhaps Alan St. Pierre and maybe even you have been misunderstood by some of your statements, maybe even Russ Belville. And it seems to be causing quite a painful big brouhaha. And it would be wonderful if we could find some way to bring healing and peace to this situation. So, Keith, with that said, I'd like to pass the floor to you on this particular topic.
Sure.
I can be more poignant on my questions if necessary, but we'll see how you cover it.
I appreciate it, Casper. Look, I want people to understand, first off, that I think the use of marijuana as a religious sacrament should be protected constitutionally under the First Amendment. I think it's the government has no business telling us which religion is valid and which isn't. And I recognize that there are thousands of people who consider marijuana their religious sacrament. But our point has been that it has not yet been accepted by courts in this country, either state or federal. There are a couple of minor exceptions where the Rastafarians have been recognized as a religion that for which marijuana is a sacrament, but they've never applied that defense to acquit the defendants, because in the two cases that have gone that far to the Court of Appeals, the quantity involved was considered to be too much for personal religious use. So here's what I think we need to distinguish. It's fine to believe that marijuana is your sacrament, and I don't think either Normal or the government or anyone else has any business second-guessing you on that. But it's also important for people to know that if you are arrested, the religious use defense will not save you. It will not be accepted by state or federal courts as a basis to acquit you. And there could be no more obvious proof of that than the fact that Roger Christie, and by the way, I recognize some people think we must be fighting with Roger. I know Roger, I'm not a close personal friend, but he's come to many Normal conferences. In fact, usually when we're on the West Coast, Roger would attend our conferences. And he seems like quite a nice fellow. He seems sincere in his beliefs. But one of the mistakes I think Roger made strategically was, for a long time, I think right up until the time which he was arrested himself, he was selling kits to people who would become, I guess, ministers in his THC church, I believe is what he called his THC ministry. And for, a couple hundred dollars or something, he was claiming that if you had this certificate, then you were protected from arrest and prosecution because you were using marijuana for religious purposes. Well, that is simply not accurate. It has never been accepted by American courts, and it's a sham to sell sell people something, charge them money, and make them think that they're safe from arrest. Several people who believed Roger and bought those certificates were subsequently prosecuted. Some of them served time in jail. And, of course, unfortunately, now Roger has been in jail for quite a few months, apparently with an awfully high bond. I forget the level, but he's, I think, still sitting in federal jail out in Hawaii. And if marijuana, if the religious use of marijuana were a valid defense, well, then why would Roger be facing trial right now? So, again, I don't mean any disrespect to Roger or for others who believe in the religious use of marijuana, but I do think it's important that for normal, when people call us and ask us legal questions, we have to tell them what is and is not, or what is accepted by the courts as a valid defense and what is not. And the religious use of marijuana simply is not accepted by the courts in this country.
And then, kind of like what you're saying, is it's not that you're throwing Roger under the bus. I get the impression that you like him and respect him as a person and have much love and friendship towards him. It's just the legalese and his approach to this particular topic that has caused you to feel the need.
All right, so my only issue here with Keith Straub, and I totally support him, just like Casper's saying, he's one of my mentors as well. I'm very pleased with a lot of his statements and a lot of what he's done, obviously. But in regards to religious use of cannabis, I think that he is not only misinformed, but misinforming people. And I'm going to play a clip at the end of this of Patrick Duff, who has won cannabis religious defense in court and has other examples of that. But, I mean, just the First Amendment alone should protect that. So I think that we should be encouraged to use that as a defense, not discouraged, because religious use is very legitimate. And it goes back thousands and thousands of years in the Bible, in the Bhagavad Gita, in other religions as well. So I think that it's a very valid use of freedom, and I think we should be encouraged to use it, not discouraged. But Keith is saying that, you know, Roger Christie's current incarceration is sure evidence that this doesn't work in court. I think he's wrong about that. I mean, just because one person gets arrested, or maybe a million people get arrested for it, despite that it should be legal, doesn't mean that it's disqualified just because of that one person. I mean, look at the medical use of cannabis. Okay, people, thousands of people, tens of thousands of people get arrested when they are legitimately using cannabis for medical usage, or selling cannabis for medical usage, you know, whether it be just simple possession or otherwise. Like John Novak, for example, didn't have over his limit, wasn't a you know, cannabis dispensary, was growing cannabis for his medical usage. He ended up incarcerated, spending time in jail, spending, you know, or I don't know about the jail actually, but definitely got his property seized, and now he's in a big court battle. He's been in it for almost a year. I know a lot of people. I give tons of examples of that. Charles Lynch in California. I mean, just so many of them are arrested for medical cannabis, despite that they have a legal medical validation given by a doctor that is authorized by state law, and end up with the same problems that these religious defenses use. Just because cannabis people are persecuted does not mean we should just give up the fight. And that's my problem with Keith, and that's really it. That's all I really got for, you know, as far as a problem with Keith. And same with Paul Armenteno and Russ Belleville. I mean, Russ Belleville has posted many times, and, you know, one of these pictures that he made a graph of the religious use of cannabis, and he's pointing out in this graph that, you know, the religious use goal is very limited, and the normal goal is very wide. And he's basically saying, you know, the normal goal is to legalize it, period, hands down, that's it. And the religious goal is using it for, you know, religious purposes only. And, you know, I think that if we go narrow like that, then even normal can be criticized for their support of things like religious medical cannabis. I mean, you know, I heard Russ, and I'll even play a clip of that at the end here. I heard Russ saying, you know, that SB 5073 in Washington was the best thing to happen for patients in Washington ever.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Radical rant. Welcome back, Normalizers. Hey, yesterday we did an alert from Normal's own Paul Armentano about bills in Washington State to improve the medical marijuana law, Senate Bill 5073 and House Bill 1100. And from the news report that Paul put out, it sounded pretty good to me. It create dispensaries and it would define cannabis products, other good little intentions here in the bill. Sounded really great. But then as I was perusing my comments, I was getting a lot of negative comments about the bill saying, don't support this. Don't support this. It has all these restrictions and regulations and it's got a registry and, oh, we'll have to have we'll have to sign up with the state. And instead, we should support sensible Washington, the full legalization, the one that removes criminal penalties for marijuana, just completely legalizes marijuana. Why is this an either-or thing? Why is it that we have to pick just one thing to support? You know, politics doesn't work that way. We can support a bill that's in the legislature that would make things better on the medical side, and we can support an initiative to gather signatures to have people vote on full legalization. Why not work for both? Why does this have to be an either-or thing? Both things can be supported. But even with that, I went to the actual bill. I looked it up, and I've got it linked on the post up there at stash.normal.org. You can read it for yourself. I went to the bill myself and started to read it. And as I read it, I'm like, this is one of the best bills I've ever seen to improve a medical marijuana program to date. It's a dream come true for Washington patients and for cannabis businesses. You can open dispensaries. You don't have to pay sales tax. You can have collectives of up to 25 patients with 99 plants.
And I just disagree with that. I mean, it's obvious. I mean, all the different groups that came out in opposition to that and all the facts that came out after it was finally passed, it was the worst thing that ever happened to medical cannabis in Washington. But they were very much in favor of it. They did not offer any criticism. They did multiple broadcasts on SB 5073. They did not offer any criticism to any of the bad points of SB 5073. Yet, they're saying their entire goal of Normal is to fully legalize cannabis. Well, SB 5073 was not even coming close to that goal. And now under the new regulations under SB 5073, there's going to be more arrest or more possibilities of arrest, certainly not less, because like in Section 301, the doctor-patient relationship now becomes complicated and it's going to be less likely people are going to get a medical recommend. So, I mean, if Normal wants to say that, well, the medical or the religious use of cannabis is not valid in the courts and people still get arrested for it, like Roger Christie, well, same with the medical use of cannabis, which Normal obviously supports and obviously gives a lot of favor to and obviously is not helping anything. And for example, and this came from a Normal statistic in California Normal, their website was saying in 1990 there were about 20,000 cannabis arrests for possession of cannabis in California. In 2008, there was over 60,000 arrests for medical cannabis in California. Or for cannabis, that is, cannabis in general, in California. And so, you know, since 1990 to 2008, there's been a threefold increase, which shows that the medicalization of cannabis has not helped anything. Yet Normal continues to favor these things, these House bills that are favorable to medical cannabis, medicalizing an herb that should be free, totally free. And you know, on one hand, Normal saying, well, we want it to be fully legalized, totally legalized. That's our goal, and we're focused on that, not on the religious use or anything else. We're just focused on full legalization. But then they go back to this medical thing, and they start supporting medical cannabis, which only gives it to a certain group of people, not everybody, just a certain group of people, just like they're saying about religious cannabis usage. So I think that they're kind of being hypocrites on that, and that's what I'm pointing out. That's the only problem I've got with Normal. And I think that they ought to change their tone. You know, if they're going to be in favor of full legalization only, then they've got to continue with that. They've got to, you know, be solid and determined in that and not sway from their goal if they're going to criticize people like Roger Christie who are in it for religious use, which, you know, obviously isn't full legalization. You know, I mean, technically it could be, but, you know, I mean, it's not full legalization. But yet it gives some freedom to people who would like to exercise their First Amendment rights. If they're going to criticize people for the religious use of cannabis, saying that it doesn't help everybody, well, then they ought to criticize the medical use of cannabis and say that these cards that the doctors are selling, you know, $200 for my medical recommend in Washington, that I could have easily gone to jail for anyway, they should criticize those people who are selling their kits. You know, and that was their main problem with Roger Christie, is Roger Christie was selling religious kits, and they didn't agree with that. So I think that, you know, they ought to be fair and also criticize the medicalization of cannabis, too. Anyway, here's some clips for you to illustrate my point. First of all, Patrick Duff, who gives some examples of religious cannabis defense. And then I wanted to play Russ Belville on the topic of SB 5073, where he's saying it's the best thing to ever happen to medical cannabis in Washington, which I totally disagree with.
Greetings, and my name is Patrick.
And coming up next, a bit late on Free Radio, is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. You are tuned, in fact, to 101.1 FM, in case you hadn't looked at your dial recently. Also, freakradio.org. If you're on your computer, stay tuned. We're going to be with you for 2 hours. I will, that is, pretty much alone in the studio at the moment, but with hopefully some phone interviews coming up. The issue, of course, is the ever-expanding Occupy Santa Cruz and the ever-repressed or suppressed Occupy Santa Cruz, which faces now a injunction in the Santa Cruz courts, the compliments of John Barisoni, city attorney, allegedly claiming that Occupy Santa Cruz, or part of it, is a public nuisance. We have a phone call, so before I launch into a little music, let's hear what this caller has to say. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert.
Yes.
You should tell your listeners that Free Radio is now broadcasting on 101.3.
Whoa, a change. I wasn't even aware of that. How could you do such a thing, Dennis, without advising me?
Well, Robert, it's on a need-to-know basis, and I guess you need to know now.
Apparently so. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah, we no longer have any interference on 101.3, so hopefully our listeners will find the experience more pleasant.
And it only requires a one-number change in bumper stickers and other paraphernalia.
How interesting of you to note that.
Indeed. Well, thank you, Dennis, for advising us that we are, in fact, no longer at 101.1, but 101.3.
Have a good show.
And I'll see you at 8.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That was Uncle Dennis, who does have a three-hour show after mine, from the cream to the dregs. And it is news to me that it's 101.3. It shows you how up on these things are. I am, that is. Well, hopefully now I'll remember that. May make a few mistakes here, but I guess we should change the logo in the studio as well. Anyway, most of what I'm going to be talking about today on Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, I'll be playing a lot of interviews, making a couple of phone interviews, and following the latest events in the attack on Occupy Santa Cruz and Occupy UC Berkeley, for that matter, which was seriously and viciously attacked by police last night, by authorities, UC authorities. I'm only going to follow that kind of peripherally because folks have to. I've been following it on the internet, and that's really where it's probably best to catch the pictures of police jabbing their billy clubs into students whose only intention is to try to have a public assembly. And I guess the point was to also set up some tents on Sproul Plaza, which has become sort of the symbol of Occupies throughout the country and throughout the world, that there is it's not just a protest that comes and goes, it is a protest that stays, and that's the point of the Occupy. And that's why it's called Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Santa Cruz, Occupy UC Berkeley. Let's hear a little music. Here's one from 25 years ago, or more, actually. More or less, maybe 25, 30 years ago. Kristen Lems, We Shall Never Give Up.
Sounds like this. I am asking everything you have to give. I am asking everything you have to give. We will never give up. We will never give up. We will never give in. We will never give in. Your arches, your strength, your patience, your sense of have nothing to offer you but this. In return, I have nothing to offer you but this. Your pride in being a woman, all the dreams that you have for your daughter. Your pride in being a woman, the dreams that you have for yourself. We will never give up. We will never give up. We will never give in. We will never give in. We will never give up. We will never give up. We will never give in. We will never give in. And the knowledge that at the end of your days, you will be able to look back and say, with a knowledge that at the end of your days, I never gave up.
Reaching Across the Years. That, of course, was feminists in the early 80s struggling for the ERA and other basic rights that they still don't have, really. You are tuned to Free Radio 101.3, as has been pointed out by Uncle Dennis, our new place on the radio dial, which apparently, I just told by a caller, Bob LaMonica, is actually much better, and I believe him. And, in fact, Bob may be calling in shortly. That's probably him right now because he was at the ACLU meeting, the public meeting on Sunday, and apparently buttonholing ACLU guys and gals right and left. Let's see what's up. Hey, Bob, what's happening?
Well, hail Uncle Dennis, first of all. It comes in magnifico.
All right.
It's a significant change where we live. I just got to say that, hail, and everybody that was involved. And you know, Robert, until proven otherwise, I'm still thinking that Free Radio Santa Cruz is the only surviving broadcast pirate in the country.
Well, I know I put you in touch with, Free Radio Berkeley. What was the story up there?
Well, there's no response back. I tried to call them, and the line was dead. But maybe they are on the air. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't got new information for you. I'll try and do a little more research. I'm in kind of swamped with other stuff or preoccupied.
Most of them are online, of course, and they have moved away from the heat of being a broadcast.
Of actually being out on the pedestrian day-to-day radio, car radios, yeah.
But you wanted to know about the ACLU confab.
Yeah, once every year they have this big, or maybe twice every year, they have a big public shindig where they give out their Hammer of Justice awards, and that go to such people like Ryan Coonerty. But this year, I guess, went to Valerie Corral. You know, I got no real objection to that. And they have big speakers, and they all assemble in the room number 3 over at the Loudon Nelson Center and pat themselves all on the back. Tell us what happened on Sunday. That's when this most recent ACLU confab came up, right?
Well, it was like, what's the name of the movie? Pocket Full of Miracles, where the, I think his name is Edward Everett Horton, says everybody arrives last. People started, I think it was supposed to start at 1 o'clock. By about 2 o'clock, it had its full turnout, which might be, 30 people might have been there, max. So it was a fairly small turnout. Valerie Corral won the Hammer of Justice, or was awarded the Hammer of Justice, and the Bell of Freedom went to Craig Haney, who is a USC professor, UC Santa Cruz professor and activist, about prison reform, and they were both very eloquent and excellent. I mean, I won't say anything negative about it. And the speaker that they had afterwards, the ACLU in California, is challenging the death penalty here. And she spoke very eloquently. You know, there's something like 30 states in the United States have the death penalty on the books, right? I mean, in 2011, go figure. So I thought it was good. I thought it was pleasant. It was good. Happy to be there.
Yeah, I know that you and I have been to a couple of the ACLU Board of Directors meetings because my concern about civil liberties locally being routinely violated both at the city council level and by the police and by the deputies and by agencies that discriminate against poor and homeless people, which is my focus, but even against the citizenry generally, the ones you've been concerned about, the march on New Year's Eve, the police corruption and getting into surveillance of that, and not having adequate oversight of the police department. All these are things that issues in other cities the ACLU takes up and pursues with some vigor, at least they have in some of the cities, and that's what really I find praiseworthy about the ACLU, and we found that's not the case here. I've kind of given up on them a decade and a half ago when I saw they abandoned homeless activists to the jaws of the the city attorney and the district attorney when they were, you know, being crushed for trying to stand up for rights like the right to sleep, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere for homeless people in the case of continuing shelter emergency and absence. And the ACLU has done nothing about that in here, although elsewhere it's pushed successful lawsuits. So I saw that, you know, the ACLU here is kind of intermingled with people who are political potentates like Mike Rotkin and Ryan Coonerty, former mayors. Coonerty is the current mayor, but almost the outgoing mayor. And you brought some issues to the ACLU, and you chatted with some folks. Did you... Were you pretty much sort of schmoozing it up in a friendly way, or did you raise some critical questions?
Well, I don't like coming on like a, I don't know, whatever, like a Leica, okay, but like a harsh. But sometimes those tactics are required. I've certainly learned that from you. You can't throw out civil disobedience, right, mm-hmm. in the final analysis. What really got me going on all this, because I've been on a hiatus for maybe 10 years, was connecting with Wes Moats about a year ago. And then hearing Zach Friend and Rick Martinez on the radio on John Sandage's Talk About show.
Those are police officers.
Yeah, and the snide remarks, right? And I said, no, I can't. I can't let this slide by without my getting involved. And this has to do with Wes Moats being cited sentenced and convicted for participating. And this is the key, participating in an unpermitted parade. And at that self-same parade were former council members, 800 to 1,000 participants, as I understand it. And nobody stood up, Robert,
other than DIY parade that's been going on now for 5 or 6 years downtown.
Other than one comes to understand in this town are the principled, and I don't agree with you on everything you do, by the way, but, you know, in the final analysis, when it gets down to acts of principle and courage, all right, you can count on a handful of people. Right? And that's what I will consider turn the tide on New Year's Eve.
So
but
what
the
about
ACLU
the,
did not. They didn't do anything.
Right, and they've done nothing about their canvassers or getting hassled by police
and they need to be called to account on this, and they can't just blow it off and say.
And I know you've been to board of directors meetings and sought that unsuccessfully.
And I will seek it successfully or
what
unsuccessfully.
What happened at the board? At this
for 5 years.
What happened to the public meeting, though? I mean, that's really what interests me. That's what this report is about. Anything happened?
What
there?
Happened? It was pleasant, Robert. I mean, Valerie spoke very eloquently. This guy, Craig Haney, spoke eloquently. People were very pleasant.
So you didn't have a sign that said, "Where's the ACLU?"
I talked to some people, you know, on one to one and the like. But for myself, I will give it 5 years. And my sense is the ACLU Santa Cruz chapter has to acknowledge its dereliction of purpose for the last, let's just say 25 years. Okay? If you're going to claim that you're defending the Bill of Rights in Santa Cruz County and the kind of scene like the West Moses affair can go down under your watch, then you got to be called to account. That's where I'm at with.
Well, you know, I actually, if people want to check out my specific concerns about the ACLU, you can go online to Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. I know when the last board of directors meeting came up, I kind of put a lengthy letter online about, you know, the 10 things that I suggested they might want to do back in May if they wanted to pursue local issues. They weren't very serious, energy-consuming things. They just required the board of directors taking a position on local issues like the criminalization of poor people, like, you know, some things you disagree with, like civil injunctions against people like Ana Richardson and Miguel de Leon for the crime of, you know, sleeping downtown at night, for a series of things that they, I heard absolutely nothing on the ACLU from for months and months and months, but all this sort of smiley talk from, you know, even the newest board members who are, I'm sure in their own way, you know, if you talk to them as individuals, they oppose civil liberties violations, but they don't have the interest or they think it's not politically strategic to bring these issues up on the board. And again, as I told you, I'm not really interested in spending a lot of energy on it. I wanted to get a quick report from you. Because,
may shift over time, Robert. There's some new blood.
You know,
I got to put in a plug for Steve Plage. I mean, as imperfect as Steve is. He is making an attempt. And this whole thing with Steve being the server process for Occupy Santa Cruz, that was foisted on him.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that.
You know, and I think he's trying his best. And that Occupy thing, you know, and you and I were both at the, oral communications on Tuesday. This is one of the bellwether events in this town.
No, I think it's a real place for people to raise issues and for groups to raise issues that the council and the authorities and the police have ignored, that they can no longer ignore, because there's too many people that will realize that even though we may have different issues, it's time for us to support each other on these different issues, and thereby we can actually maybe make some changes. That's I think, it's happening.
Well, absolutely. Maybe I'll see you. I'm going to try to make it Friday to the GA. And let me just say in conclusion, hail Uncle Dennis and hail Free Radio.
Hey, thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
All right.
See ya.
Bye-bye. And the GA, for those who don't know, is the General Assembly of the Occupy Santa Cruz Movement, which happens, it's happening right now, every night from 6 to 7:30 in front of the county building. I should say in front of the courts. I always confuse those two buildings or collate them or confabulate them or put them together. Conflate them. There we go. That's the right word. And they meet and they talk about issues and they can sense on some general agreements, what to support, what to do next, how to maintain, to some extent, their just physical presence in the occupation, which is now becoming coming under strong attack from the city and from the courts. That's at least the city is trying to do that in the courts. And indeed, we may have an interview with Steve Plage later in the show. Plage is a guy who I've been both supportive and critical of in different points. I've had him on the show as co-host. I've savagely attacked him for taking an unwanted and inappropriate leadership role at Occupy Santa Cruz. Rather, we don't have leaders, and in fact, creating such things gives the police a megaphone and puts people in a position to be more likely to be scared, because when a police officer comes down and tells you something, well, you know where it's coming from. But when someone in your own group is acting like a police officer or conveying the police officer's commentary as though it were gospel or something to be taken seriously, when, you know, it may be something to be taken seriously. It may be certainly something to be considered, but not something. If it comes from somebody within the group, it often has more force, and that has worried me in the past with Steve. However, today I talked to Steve at length, different points, and Steve is now the only named party in this injunction that the city is seeking. The city has created this fiction of a permit that the Occupy Santa Cruz did not request. There is some controversy as to whether Steve himself sought it without the permission of the General Assembly. And actually, again, over the opposition, I would say, probably turned out most people in the General Assembly. And you might say, well, why? Why don't you just go get a permit? Isn't that, you know, sort of a simple, easy way to get legal? And the answer is it may sound that way if you believe that authorities are really being straight with you. But in fact, you'll find in cities like San Francisco, where Food Now Bombs sought permits at the suggestion of the city authorities or the police or even their own members, they found that they were ways that the city then used to come after them and attempt to shut down their operations. Food Not Bombs is an operation in San Francisco, particularly in the late 80s and early 90s, that did a lot of serving free food in a very politically active way to poor and homeless people, dramatizing the failure of the city to deal with homeless issues and dramatizing the criminalization of the poor. They would arrest them for sleeping. They would arrest them for covering up with blankets. They would arrest them for setting up a tent when there was no shelter for them to go to. And therefore, they were in essence saying, you don't have the right to survive. You don't have the right to exist in these places. You're just, you know, get out of town, driving people away in the middle of an economic crisis. In a way, this is quite similar to what's happening now. In fact, it's the same process, the same political mentality, the same these spaces are preserved for the gentry, for the well-to-do, for the upper middle class and middle class, and done at the using the rules of bureaucrats who pay little attention to the real needs of the broader needs of everyone in the community, and even less attention to those who are low income and poor and homeless. So anyway, this injunction came after this phony permit was granted to people who hadn't asked for it, with all kinds of restrictions that had to do with cutting back the number of tents and demanding more porta potties and claiming that the people could not have access to county bathrooms, which they had previously had, and refusing to deal with the sanitation crisis that really has been to some extent created by the city, because they won't open their bathrooms at night, again, because they want to deter political protest, which is the whole point of this. They want to get rid of this large political protest that is growing and also is involved with an occupation. And agreed, there are problems with an occupation that come along when any group of people is living together. But the reality is, frankly, this occupation is serving people better than any homeless services ever could have served people, and serving more of them and over a more continuous period of time. You have at night at the homeless service center, in terms of people who need emergency shelter, there's beds for 46 people, whereas down at the Occupy Santa Cruz tonight, there is actually a space for anyone who wants to go there, and many people are going there, including people from their homes who realize they can't afford to pay rent, so they're going and setting up a tent. And to this you might say, oh, how can they do this? This is ruining the environment. The grass is going to be, you know, ruined. And in fact, I understand that people at Occupy Santa Cruz and the campers nearby, who are both, to some extent, who are part of Occupy Santa Cruz, sympathetic with it, or are seeking its protection and paying some attention to some of the concerns that they have for keeping things mellow down there, or with, you know, all kinds of periodic exceptions. I mean, you know, it's not a tea party. It's a living situation that people are thrown into because they really have no options in Santa Cruz if they're poor. And elsewhere, of course, it's open season on homeless people, whereas at this place, at the San Lorenzo Benchlands next to Occupy Santa Cruz, it's not. So the permit situation was a phony one. I'm going to play some tape on this issue, and I'm going to talk about it. Probably the best thing for me to do is to start playing some tape. It was discussed to some extent at Santa Cruz City Council meeting on Tuesday, when it was not on the agenda, but what was on the agenda, ironically enough, but not told to the public. It was a secret emergency item that was put on the closed agenda and then not mentioned by anybody I guess perhaps the city attorney might have mentioned it if you'd listened very, very carefully at the end of the meeting. But there was no mention of it, even though it was quite pertinent to all the oral communications, or 90% of the oral communications that came at 5 o'clock, which came from people at Occupy Santa Cruz who were enraged at these permit requirements that were really a transparent attempt to create conditions that the Occupy Santa Cruz could not meet, and so essentially lay them open for large fines, financial liability, who knows, maybe even criminal prosecution. And so what was done in closed session was the city council apparently authorized this injunction that the city attorney went into court today, John Barisoni and his flunky Caio Arellano, which they now have gotten an order to show cause and an order shortening time. Normally you have to give the people who they're trying to shut down or enjoin 10 days. Well, they've reduced that to 6 days, claiming some kind of great emergency, which has not been shown at all. There's no emergency. In fact, the emergency is created when these kinds of efforts of mutual community support are shut down. Then you have people going off into the wilderness and dying alone and facing all kinds of problems alone, that where in a community of people, they're more likely to actually find support. This, however, doesn't interest members of the ruling class, because they assume the homeless people just die and get it over with. You know, get out of town anywhere, get out of sight. This town is not a campground. This town is not. We have no interest in your well-being. Get lost. Although you have, of course, the liberal side of it that says, oh, you know, we have these services, but you know, you can't serve everyone, and everybody has to do. It's a difficult economy, and you better keep moving along. You know, that sort of thing. In any case, this injunction mandates a hearing on Wednesday, next Wednesday, at which point the Occupy Santa Cruz folks are going to have to show that they're not a public nuisance, or else face all kinds of huge amounts of charges. As I understand it, and I've got to look at this more closely, maybe I can get the update from Ed Fry, who's an attorney who's an activist there, and is also an activist who is a jailbird who's serving a term for sleeping at a protest a year ago, or bedding down at a protest. He's facing a 6-month jail term, which he's only served 2 weeks of. He will be hopefully coming on the air around 7:20 talking about this issue more fully. So I'm going to kind of wait till that. I'm going to start playing some interviews. But I would encourage people to begin emailing the Santa Cruz City Council and the city attorney, and telling them to drop this injunction immediately. And more important than that, be prepared to support campers who I think may be planning to nonviolently and civilly but distinctly resist this injunction. And, you know, it's a huge waste of public money. It's a violation of the right to assemble. It tramples on the needs of poor and homeless people who are there getting support from this campground. And it also is an attack on political expression, because this is really, as I think Bob LaMonica said earlier, this is one of the first times in 20 or 30 years that a mass movement has coalesced. And I think it's frightening the politicians. They want to get rid of it. And we have to make sure that they don't do that. Anyway, let's hear some interviews, and I believe these are pretty recent interviews. Let's see what we got. You can, of course, call in. The number is 427-3772, area code 831, 427-3772, and I will answer your call. So, think of that.
So here we are talking with, and you of course can jump in if you want, talking with Becky Johnson on the steps of the county courthouse. It is around 5:30 or thereabouts. And I see you have a sign, Becky. Today, of course, is the 7th of November, 2011, Monday. Free Felix Kroll, jailed for sleeping without ID on PC 647E, anti-lodging law. What's this about, Becky?
Well, Occupy Santa Cruz has been threatened several times with PC 647E, the statewide anti-lodging law. And this law, you know, it's been on the books since 1872. It's been modified a little more recently. Parts of it were found unconstitutional. I believe it's still unconstitutional. It's a misdemeanor to be lodging without permission on public or private property in the state of California. And we've had some sheriffs that came up here and saw some people sleeping and decided that that was lodging, even though the lodging law text says nothing about sleeping. So there you go. For Felix Krull, he's been tonight he'll be spending his fifth night in jail for having fallen asleep, and he didn't have any ID on him when they found him.
This is a protester with Occupy Santa Cruz who was essentially doing an all-night vigil and fell asleep there. And he was one of the eight people who got 647E citations over the last week, which amounts to a serious crackdown. Each of these is a jury trial, potentially. Each of these mandates up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. Now, for the last three or four nights, there have not been any further citations of this kind. And the number of tents continues to grow, both in the San Lorenzo benchlands and then around the corner, which you can see visibly in front of the courthouse as you drive by on Water Street.
And so the sheriffs and authorities deem that he might not, who was this person, he might not show up at his court date. So they jailed him to make sure that he does get to
it wasn't
court
a decision on his part not to say who he was.
No, he just didn't have ID. His name is Felix Krull.
Right.
He said his name.
Okay, so, and I guess somebody else was also arrested that night, or rather the next night, but we don't know who he was, right?
I believe he had a better ID situation.
And he was also released that same night. Felix, for some reason, was held for 4 or 5 days. He's a middle-class, younger guy. I haven't talked to him much. He actually got out of jail that shortly after this interview and returned to general jubilation. But I don't know too much about his history, but I got the impression he was an active, continuous activist at the center of this occupation. And, again, makes me wonder if activists are being targeted. Again, I'm wondering. I'm not necessarily accusing authorities in this case. So they had an illegitimate but specific reason for grabbing him because he was sleeping. And that's, you know, that's certainly a crime which they have the right to jail you for 6 months for, right? Particularly if you're at a political protest. That sounds a little strange, doesn't it?
He's out, but I know less about that case.
And he has a bail of how much Felix Krull does?
$500 bail, which suggested possibly we could get $50 together and bail him out tonight. Although he should get out tomorrow morning at 8:15, and Ed Fry is handling his case.
Now, I know that there are a number of other people who have been involved. And I see some pounding is going on over there on the geodesic dome, which has now been covered with a large blue tarp, which is nice.
And that's something that's happened in the last few days. I guess it might have been actually up by Sunday when I broadcast my last radio show. But in case it wasn't, I'm not quite sure whether it was Sunday or a few days before. This is a very large kind of heated area where homeless people, that's my interest, but where actually activists, most of them not homeless, are gathering, put their literature tables, keep their stuff safe against the rain, and also have a little, you know, ordinary warmth at night when they're there as the nights get colder and colder in this 24-hour vigil to demand meaningful changes in the economic and social structure of the country, if not to change it entirely, which, of course, is my hope.
And the General Assembly looks like it may begin to be formed here. We also have another onlooker. What is your name?
Maria Demarest.
And Maria, you've had paralegal training yourself.
Yes, and I later worked in social services with homeless families.
And how long have you been a local in Santa Cruz, or I should say, I guess up in Felton, I believe, is where you're from?
Well, I've been a local for probably over 30 years now. I came to school here, UCSC.
And you came to Occupy Santa Cruz.
Yes, I did. I'm really looking to see some reform in some of the important economic issues. I would like to see some tax laws change. I would like to see corporations paying more, middle class and lower income people paying less. among other things. I would like to stop seeing the banks take the bailout money and not use it to help people keep their homes. I've known too many people now that have lost their home in foreclosure.
And is this your first time down here at Occupy Santa Cruz?
No.
And you've been coming pretty regularly?
No, I've been checking it out.
You've been goofing off, admit it.
Yeah, I'm goofing off. I goof off here.
What a goof she is, folks. But you are interested in getting all involved in some of the legal issues that you were talking with me about earlier.
Yes, legal issues, definitely.
So we'll put you to work if we can.
Thank you.
I actually met with Maria the next day, and she may be a guest on the show. She may even call in tonight, but I think it's more likely that would happen at a future time. She's got a lot of interesting stories about her struggle with her mortgage and foreclosure and other devious banking practices she had to deal with.
And is there anything you want to say to your potential fans out there?
Everybody know that these issues they span from our youngest baby to the oldest citizens, and I would like to see everybody come down and get involved. It affects us all.
And we've been talking with?
Maria Demarest.
Thanks, Maria. So, Vicki, you say you recently talked to a bail bondsman?
Yes, I talked to Jeff at Santa Cruz Bail Bonds, and he says that Felix Kroll's $500 bail would actually be $110 out of pocket tonight if we were to bail him out. But he suggested that might be problematic because it's a misdemeanor. He would not get a court date for 6 weeks. If he stays in jail tonight, he'll get in court 8:15 tomorrow morning. He'll probably get out on his own OR with no bail. So it's not really, it's not $50 for one, and maybe it's not the best choice, but we'll see what the GA says.
Find out if you're responsible for the $500 bail if he skips town?
Yes, you do have to have a signing party that would be sufficient to the bail bondsman to serve as the co-signer on that.
He can live with you for 6 weeks.
And there you have it. Thank you, Vicki, and keep up the good work.
Thanks.
David Silva, interrupter at large. You're a man who's been on the streets a lot recently. You've been a Green Party activist. You've been abused by the police. You've been harassed by the Rangers. You've been otherwise given problems by the deputies.
It's torture.
And often you are crying for real. Now you're giving me this phony boo-hoo. I'm sorry. I don't believe a tear of it. Forget it. I would like to know what you think of all this.
It's torture.
It is.
It's like...
It's not a phony boo-hoo, eh? This is a real boo-hoo.
It's torture. Summer.
Sorry about that.
They run you around from one place to the other, and when they come in an hour later to the other place, and they run you around to another place, and they come again and run you around, and they do that over and over and over and over, sometimes 3 nights in a row. The third night, you're crazy and screaming. I don't want to hear myself screaming, threatening people.
I'm sorry to have brought it up here, David. Now, you're indoors at the moment. Is that the story?
Yeah. Yes, I'm gonna go up where my cats are staying. My cats have been staying at Alexander's. I'm going to go sleep with them tonight. I miss them so much.
Your cats?
Yes. And my godchild had to leave town to get a job so he can survive, trying to get us out of this mess. This bureaucracy is falling apart.
What do you think of the protest, David?
It's wonderful. It's wonderful. It's about time people started realizing what's going on.
And,
it's been a good impact on the homeless community. I didn't think it was going to be, but it has been. It's been a very good impact.
And so initially you had your doubts, and what reassured you about that?
Well, when the camp split up, we were first right on top of the homeless people in the duck pond. When the camp split up, it was like no hard drugs, no liquor policy. And a lot of the homeless people that were like subjected to that and having to live in that environment came with us. About two-fifths came with us. And they've stayed clean and sober because they have hope because of Occupy. They have hope. You know, they haven't had hope in a long time. And another fifth are like thinking about that we're not so bad. Two-fifths are drunk and fucked up, and they still, you know, think that we bumped their campsite. You know, I'm oversimplifying, but that's really what's about happening. I think it's incredible. I didn't expect that benefit.
And yet everybody is, to some extent, getting some protection. protection from the police.
Yeah, you can call it that. No, I was protected by Camp Occupy. I was never protected by the police. Never. I was tortured by the police.
No, protected from the police by the fact that there is a camp.
Yes.
Even if they're not.
That's why there's a lot of homeless people there, because it's safer.
Yeah.
Word got out.
Right. Photograph.
I'm sorry I cried.
No, I'm sorry I mistook your crying. I thought you were joking when you cried. And as you can see, obviously, my lack of certain empathy here, David. You're dealing with a less empathetic kind of guy.
I want to go home.
I hear you.
And maybe this week I might have one.
You've been working really hard at getting some kind of lodging.
4 or 5 appointments a day. I run around, and then people treat you like you're living a life of luxury. Your leisure is on the end. Well, why can't you just come? I said, because I have other appointments, you know. I'm trying to get housing. Yeah, but you want me to come see a shrink just in order to get off of medication? Excuse me. Fuck you. You know, Western medicines can go suck. I'm doing only Oriental medicine for now on, except for my basic HIV meds. I'll do them, but I'm going to cut those out too if they don't fucking straighten up right soon.
We have been talking with...
Excuse my French, David Silva.
Thank you, David.
David Minton Silva, for those who remember my past life.
Indeed. Felix is getting mass hugged here. Apparently, this arch criminal has been released from jail. And Felix, quickly, how he's being hugged to death here. This is so Felix, what happened? Why are you? Did you escape?
I don't know what happened. They just decided to let me out.
They had enough of you. How many nights were you in there?
3 or 4.
Bologna sandwiches.
Yeah, the food is the worst part of the jail experience.
You weren't your isolation, or you were in the jail population?
I was in the general population.
Any other homeless folks in there? Anybody?
No.
Anything you wish to say? Any commendations to any deputies?
No.
No brutality.
Only negative feelings towards the deputies.
Any particular abuses you wish?
They're very polite, but I don't know what gives them the right to take away my freedom just for sleeping on the recording steps.
Did you decline to identify yourself? Or they just didn't believe you were who you were.
I guess my name didn't come up in their system. I didn't have any ID on me. So
do you have a court date?
No, they just released me. I don't know.
Without charges?
Yeah, I never went to court. I was thinking someone might have paid bail or something, but
no, I don't think so. Not that I've heard. Me. Wow, so it's free at last.
Free at last! Free at last! Thank God,
Felix,
free at last!
Felix Crowe is free at last. So I'm at the General Assembly. Chris is reporting on the threat of a swarm of force to cut the dome down if it wasn't removed within half an hour. And, of course, that threat was not realized. The General Assembly has about 80 to 100 people, it looks like. It's kind of chilly out.
So actually, this large geodesic dome, I don't know, 16 to 20 feet high and, I don't know, 10 to 12 feet wide in diameter, maybe larger, which was, I guess it was assembled on Sunday or Monday, and the deputies came by and then threatened to remove it if it wasn't removed, and people came down and essentially said, no, we're not going to remove it. And it's still up there as of tonight, 4 days later. It doesn't block passageway there at all. It's off the sidewalk, and it's at an entrance to the courthouse that is unused. It's locked during the day. It's required to have a fire exit cleared, but it doesn't block that. It's it's simply kind of a very impressive structure. In fact, it actually produced a kind of apparently resonance in other occupies throughout the world, according to activist Chris Doyen. I call him Kerbugger Chris, also known as Commander X, who's an activist who is back at the Occupy Santa Cruz tonight at the General Assembly, which is going on now, if anybody's interested, between 6 and 7:30, more or less. He pointed out that there's this sort of a defend the dome echoing throughout the biosphere. He's noticed that. The other one has to do is the First Amendment is our permit, which, of course, was the cry of activists from Occupy Santa Cruz who went first to the city attorney's, the city manager's office and the city council offices on Monday afternoon, and then the next day on Tuesday, last Tuesday, went to the city council chambers and raised the same cry. This particular tape is from Monday evening, so you'll probably hear something from the city council, but not from the earlier city manager, city city council members. There was the group was able to talk with Martine Bernal and with Vice Mayor Don Lane, who I think is soon to be Mayor Don Lane, God help us, and Council Member Catherine Byers, and the issue being, why are you going after us with this bogus permit demand and suggesting we're doing all kinds of horrible sanitary, having these deficiencies with poo-poo and pee-pee, when in fact you yourselves have locked the bathrooms at night. We've provided a porta-potty. You haven't brought these concerns to the General Assembly or to people that can actually pay some attention to them. Instead, you're using them as a constrictive device to tie up the Occupy Santa Cruz and then give them a farewell date. I think it was of November 16th, which is today being the 10th, I guess, is that's next Wednesday, which is the date when the court injunction is being sought to completely shut down this entire encampment as a public nuisance. Or again, I haven't read all the details. I have to get whether it's the entire encampment or only part of it, but we'll hear more about that perhaps from activist Ed Fry, who also has a degree and is, as I said, a jailbird as well as an attorney.
Here under the three-quarters moon, and Chris is kind of hoarse, and he's using a loudspeaker to try to speak.
The Chris I'm talking about is not Chris Doyon. It's another Chris there who is doing what he is a facilitator. They rotate these positions, although it does seem that a certain clique of people tends to be pretty much doing it regularly, although that doesn't necessarily mean they're entrenched in those positions. There are facilitator trainings. People can do the facilitating who want to, I believe, although I haven't tried to facilitate myself. It's kind of a difficult, it's not really a difficult job, but it's, as the weather gets colder, you have to, you explain the consensus process to the group, and then you choose note takers and vibes watchers and stackers, people who will select from people hand raised, whoever raises their hand first, the order of the speakers and things of that sort. And it happens every night, and it's happening tonight for those who are interested. It's really quite a more than democratic assembly in its own way, in theory and often in practice, although, you know, it has its drawbacks too, and I've heard people complaining about it in other respects as well. But it happens every night, and so it's something that if you've got an issue, you can put it on the agenda, unlike the city council, which you have to beg and plead and put down large campaign contributions and that sort of thing to get anything heard, or have 150 people writing angry letters. And even then, unless the fire engine doesn't go around the corner, you'll get a two-way street on Pacific Avenue whether you like it or not. At least that was my perception of that latest controversy at city council.
Well, it is it's about 9:20. I'm back here at the Occupy Santa Cruz site here on November 7th. The General Assembly has ended. Folks are chatting, and the geodesic dome
is camp up here?
Geodesically set up. There are numerous posters around it. I should say banners demand corporate accountability. Occupy Santa Cruz. We are all the people. Grievances. And their folks are setting up for the night. So, Casey, a report on the General Assembly. I left about half an hour into it. What went down?
I don't know. You got to give me time to think.
I'll give you time to think. When I left, there was a proposal that the 12 people stay here, the people with cameras come, a number of other items as part of the proposal to defend the dome, as it was put.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we decided that 15 people or more, not just 15 people that we designate, will defend the dome. And actually, we have a good amount of people here now, and I think we'll have a good amount of people here overnight.
And was there much dissension or debate about that? When I left, I heard people saying, well, what about the people in the camp? Aren't they more important than the dome? As though there were some opposition. I mean, some contradiction between defending the one and the other. I thought that actually defending the dome might be good preparation for defending the people, but I'd get on the stack to discuss that. What else was said that you think was of interest?
About the dome, we're defending it. We're allotting $90 to go to the supplies needed to defend.
Charging things, batteries, and flashlights, or I should say, computers and such. Anything else come up? Any other proposals? I know the Board of Supervisors meets tomorrow morning, and there's plans to have individuals go there. I guess tomorrow afternoon the shitty council will be meeting. And did Gon Lame, the vice mayor, ever show up?
There was a report that he came in for the beginning of the GA, but I guess he left soon after.
I did see Daryl Darling, one of his associates, and Daryl told me that he had been in a number of the other General Assemblies, but perhaps low profile.
Yeah, I think he...
That is that Vice Mayor Don Lane, who I sarcastically call Gon Lame, had been to the General Assemblies, but not said anything or made any concerns known. And the reason this is important is because 4 or 5 hours before this recording you're hearing now, Lane had made public statements to a group of people, angry protesters, who came to the city offices, marched there, angry about this permit constriction that was being used to throttle the protest, demanding to know what kind of complaints he had regarding the protest, and they wanted to see them. Lane would not make them public, and he tried to play this sort of double game of, oh, gee, I'm on your side, I'd like to negotiate, but there are all these problems which he had not brought in any way to the assembly as an individual or as a public official. And his notion that their only response is to come down with a punitive eviction notice disguised as a permit, and then, of course, an injunction, which he also didn't tell the community about the next day when he gave a long speech at city council after the oral communications period, tends to, you know, reinforce my sense of him as a weaselly politician who's has a lot of trouble giving a straight answer when it requires a position that is going to be revealing of the kind of callousness and punitiveness and lack of transparency and lack of accountability and direct opposition to basic civil liberties concerns that the current city policy has. And he doesn't like to do that because, you know, he's a liberal, that sort of thing. Well, the truth is a somewhat more depressing.
I haven't really seen him out here at all my entire time out here. I mean, I've been here the entire time, so...
You know what he looks like.
Yeah, and so, I mean, he's...
Briefly, or maybe in disguise. Could he be in disguise? In a hoodie, perhaps.
Maybe in a hat, yeah. But maybe, he's not going to go out, hey, I'm Don Lane, I'm here, you know.
He is the vice mayor, and he will soon be the mayor.
Yeah.
So, looks like folks are, there's more folks here than usual at this time of night. The weather is turning colder. The sky is clear and you have a 4/5 moon out there.
Yeah.
You'll be sleeping in the campground?
Some of us are moving up here to defend the dome.
And you will be available by phone. Your phone is charged and ready to go.
It is.
You'll be calling Felton so we can go, nee, nee, we are in Felton, when you call and say that you're being attacked.
I guess so. Oh.
Hopefully we'll be able to, I don't know, put out the word. Of course, everybody is going to be putting out the word. That's not going to be very hard to do.
Yeah.
Any reports from the campground? I wasn't down there today, and I know that I was a little bit put off by the hostile reaction I got from two people down there who are having their own problems, but wanted to blame me. Can you imagine that? Yes. Oh, Commander X, how's it going, X?
Hi, I'm going to unpack Lindo Master's car and bring my stuff over here, get right home with you.
Where is the... We'll check that out. Commander X, you were the facilitator. You're the facilitator of the meeting tonight.
So it was Commander X who was facilitating. That is Chris Doyen. I apologize. I thought it was another Chris. But, yes, that was the meeting he facilitated on Monday night.
I was, in fact...
Your first facilitation?
No, that's my... second. My first was Halloween.
Now, what happened at the meeting you think was of importance for people to know?
Well, City Councilman Lane attended briefly for 20 minutes, sat up there in the top step and listened.
Uh-huh.
Didn't have much patience, I guess, because he left pretty quickly.
What other issues? I don't think that was particularly important, but what other issues? Of course, he will be mayor. We can say the mayor sat on the steps, or the mayor-to-be sat on the steps. What...
What else happened at the meeting?
The mayor to be, huh?
Yeah, he'll be mayor in 2 weeks.
It was pretty spooky because he didn't really fucking, he just kind of crept into the meeting and then crept out like a thief in the night.
And I don't really know for sure whether Don Lane will be the mayor as he was once before in 1992, 93, thereabouts. But traditionally the vice mayor becomes the mayor. But I think there's also a matter of who had the most votes at the last election, so maybe it may go to someone else.
Kind of has that quality.
I'm not exactly sure what the point of that was. Was he showing solidarity? I mean, I'd like to know. I'd like him to hear this tape and call into the radio station. And, you know, what were you trying to show us there, Councilman? I mean, I actually, you know, I was pretty nervous when I heard, because I already knew I was facilitating, that he was going to possibly attend. I wanted to run a good meeting. He had plenty of opportunity. We had lots of stacks open. We ran the stacks very, very organized tonight. We made everybody line up just to make sure that he could get his opportunity to speak. And, you know,
Special privileges and forms for the mayor, eh?
No, there was no special privileges. That's why I ran such a tight meeting, to make sure that there are no special privileges. He had the same opportunity that any other person had, and everybody that wanted to speak tonight got a chance to, using, you know, through my facilitation. So, but he didn't even stick around to get through the announcements. I mean, he literally didn't get through the sort of preamble part of the meeting where we just go through the announcements and whatnot, to any part of the meeting where he could have been free to be part of our decision-making process and speak his mind. So
thank you, Commander X. So it is now about 10 o'clock, and the drummer here on the steps. Looks like half a dozen people outside the a dozen people outside the geodesic dome. Four of them all wrapped up in a blanket on a couch. And inside the dome, there's a nice warm kind of heater with an open flame in violation of the city codes, keeping the area warm inside the dome. And there are about half a dozen people inside the dome who are sitting about staying warm. A couple folks are outside. This fellow is sleeping bag on the tarmac, and then over to the on the left side of the protest, left side of the, as you head toward the bridge, straw is strewn about. I guess I'm not sure if that's to protect the grass or to stop it from getting wet. There are several lean-tos here, and there are a number of looks like at least three tents.
Pop-ups, not lean-tos, or easy-ups, structures that can be set up quickly that are square. Structure's about, you know, 7 feet high and 4 or 5 feet wide.
And there's a sign, "How is the war economy working for you?" VeteransForPeace.org. It's an American flag, but it's not really an American flag. It's actually an absence of American flags, which is interesting. It's a corporate flag. It looks like the stars and stripes, but the stars are taken up with corporate logos. It's a flag I've seen before.
Replaced by corporate logos.
I'm talking to the 20, 25-odd people here. I have found that... Don't shoot! Don't shoot! I have found that the none of these folks has been arrested in a protest before, except Commander X and myself. Both of us are leaving for Felton for a combination of work, play, and rest. And I guess any last words before you go into the Valley of Death? He shakes his head. Any comments from you? Folks out here, before I leave you to your fate.
Jackie, what did you say?
Power to the peaceful.
Nicely put.
And I was really, I was both sort of made apprehensive about the fate of folks, because at that point it was the sheriffs that threatened to come back and demolish the dome, and they were quite insistent about it around noon that day on Monday, but. The Protesters Weekly insisted that they were going to stay there and defend the dome, and I felt concerned at the number of charges that might come down against all these folks. But I didn't want to, you know, make them feel discouraged or frightened from what they were doing, and I talked to one of the protesters at some length about it and suggested that he should talk to them if he felt it was appropriate. And it was a conflict for me as to what to do. I mean, I've been arrested several dozen times in the past. Never convicted of anything serious, although I've served a month in jail for serving free food in San Francisco. But, you know, that was because of a crazy judge. Even the DA didn't want that case to go, but it went anyway. So it was really impressive, the courage of these folks and their determination and their sense of solidarity. And that is what I think is ultimately going to defeat any attempted injunction that the city is going to press. But it's hard to tell. I mean, up in Berkeley, I was noticing, and I guess I'll take a very brief pause on that. In Berkeley, as people may know who have been following the news media, police were beating up students at UC Berkeley last night. And there was a letter written, which I'm going to read, an open letter to the administration of the University of California, Berkeley. Dear Chancellor Bergano, Executive Vice Chancellor Breslauer, and Vice Chancellor Legrand, you should all resign now. That's in italics. On Tuesday, you sent a message to students informing us we would not be allowed to set up encampments or occupy campus buildings. You quoted a passage from the Student Code of Conduct that prohibits, quote, any activities such as pulling fire alarms, occupying buildings, setting up encampments, graffiti, or other destructive actions that disrupt or interfere with anyone's ability to conduct regular activities, go to class, study, carry out their research, etc., unquote. In the same message, you claim that UC Berkeley shares, quote, many of the highest principles associated with Occupy Wall Street movement and aims to provide, quote, a model of the right to free speech, assembly, and activism. We could not agree with you more. UC Berkeley does share the principles of the Occupy Wall Street movement. In fact, we were instrumental in sparking the wave of occupations, yes, occupations, that is now sweeping the globe. Recall November 20th, 2009. The students who occupied Wheeler Hall that day were not fringe radicals or outsiders. They were students who cared so deeply about the university that they were willing to be dragged away in handcuffs for it. They spoke for all of us, and now we are answering back. The model of activism you refer to, it's us. We're all occupiers now. Don't patronize us, then, by telling us how we ought to behave. Time and again, our protests have been met with batons and guns, and admins speak about, quote, protecting us and obeying the, quote, limits of protest. After 3 years of brutality, we now know exactly who is being protected and from what. Yesterday, the police force you sent to disperse us beat and maimed several dozen students, faculty, and staff. When UCPD, University of California Police Department, requested reciprocal aid, they were reinforced by the Oakland Police Department and the Alameda County Sheriff's Department, the same officers who shot a young Iraq veteran in the head with a tear gas canister last week at Occupy Oakland, in violation of their own rules of engagement. He still has not regained the ability to speak. This is how you would protect us, with blood and fear. We are appalled but not surprised that your police beat an English department graduate student so badly that he was rushed into urgent care. This is how you would uphold the legacy of the free speech movement. Let us remind you, we are the free speech movement. We are speaking and you are beating us to the ground. About the regular activities of students at UC Berkeley, we do not agree that these activities can be limited to going to class, studying, and doing research. First, because this school is the center of our lives, which are richer and more meaningful than is allowed for by the Student Code of Conduct. Second, because there can be no regular activity in a time of crisis. We are not blind to the world. We know that it is falling apart, torn to shreds by the profit-hungry elite of the 1%. We know that you have been tasked with operating the university in crisis mode. We know this means ensuring that the 1% do not lose their financial stake in the university and its affiliate industries, the student loan racket, for example. We see right through you. It is you, on the other hand, who mistake our purposes. When we occupy buildings and set up encampments, these are our regular activities. The only people interfering with the business of the university are the police. For that, they should be banned from campus permanently and immediately. You describe UC Berkeley as a place where the best and brightest youth, staff, and faculty from all socioeconomic backgrounds work collectively to solve world problems, unquote. We wholeheartedly agree. However, by this definition, it is you who have violated the code of conduct. You are the ones who should be driven out of Sproul Plaza, not us. Make no mistake. There can be no regular activity when a militarized police force is allowed to brutalize students with impunity. Nor can there be any peace as long as you remain at the helm of the university. Take a lesson from history, Egypt, for example, and step down now. Signed, students in the University of California at Berkeley. And that's on the website ReclaimUC.blogspot.com. So you might want to check out that website. That's the website of Occupy UC Berkeley. It's different than Occupy Berkeley, which is a different encampment, which is right across from City Hall, which I visited a couple of days ago with the very same Commander X. We were traveling around and checking things out. You're tuned to Free Radio at 101.3 FM, the new place on your dial to catch us without interference, 101.3 FM. And you can also listen to us on the stream at www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. The next 50 minutes of the show will be for, we're going to be talking about the same kind of stuff. It's we're called Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. I wear a bathrobe on occasion, though not recently, when doing homeless protests. And Robespierre, of course, was one of the French revolutionary figures who favored more equal distribution, at least of opportunity, if not of wealth, and the abolition of archaic institutions that were crushing people and the economy to death in 18th century France. So bathrobe, Robespierre, Bathrobespierre, that's me. Say hello, and I'll say hello back. Phone number again, 427-3772. 427-3772. The number off air is 423-4833 or 423-HUFF. HUFF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. We've been doing our weekly meetings at the UC Santa Cruz demonstration on Water Street, right as you come over the bridge, right next to the geodesic dome, actually. And I guess next Wednesday we'll still be doing it. And we continue to do it even when if everything gets demolished around us and we get hauled away. We'll have to hold our meetings in jail. My God. If you're interested in HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, we put out public records requests to try to expose the shenanigans of the city council, their bureaucrats, the police department, and so forth, trying to see through their lies and misstatements around these issues that they use to try to discredit activists. We're concerned about civil rights for poor and homeless people in terms of giving their accounts, clearly giving them, letting them speak on the radio, helping them to make complaints, helping them to mobilize together to do the kind of protest that might actually get some changes along with Occupy Santa Cruz, which I think is going to be a key factor in many of the occupations across the country are. Let's hear some more, and soon I'm going to be giving a call to Ed Fry to see what that old guy is up to. He's an attorney and an activist who has a copy of this latest 100-page injunction. It's an attempt to get an injunction, what's called an order to show cause.
And we've been talking with...
Whole
they're anomalous. Very good. All right. So it is now November 8th, 2011, Tuesday about 5 o'clock at City Hall, oral communications period. Hey.
Oh, no.
Hey, Micah. So I'm here in the room, and we have the downtown goon squad is here. We have Officer Winston, Officer Forbes, and Sergeant Harms. Three officers in the studio to take care of it.
And Officer Warren shortly joined them for this four-man police force to police, I don't know, 30 or 40 people who were in the room and who were no threat whatsoever to anybody. But this was a massive police presence. I actually have written about this on Indie Bay. For those who like to go to Santa Cruz Indie Media, check indybay.org/Santa Cruz. Or you can Google for Robert Norris mock Nazi salute, because that's what happened later in the evening. When Ryan Coonerty, the mayor, directed the police to go after a guy who had made a comment from the audience, I walked to the front of the room and gave him a Nazi salute without saying anything, but indicating my suggestion that he was acting like a fascist. And that story is also up, as well as some photos on Santa Cruz Indie Media, and was actually covered by one news media, though blacked out by the Sentinel, which has had absolutely nothing to say about it, which, you know, it's not that important, except that what I was trying to show there was the refusal of the mayor to actually respect the court's decision. The city has a big lawsuit against it, which I initiated a decade ago, and they falsely arrested me for doing the same mock Nazi salute. And instead of respecting the latest court decision, which says you can't direct people to leave, or you can't threaten arresting people. You can't arrest people is actually the, and charge people with disrupting a meeting unless they actually disrupt it. Shouting out from the audience, unless it materially stops the meeting, is not a disruption. I mean, if it actually impedes the progress of the meeting in a substantive way, that's one thing. But if it's something the mayor just doesn't like because it doesn't fit in with his sense of the kind of smiling unanimity he'd like to see or the hushed decorum he'd like, that's not appropriate in a public meeting. A public meeting is not a courtroom. There's a difference.
Federal communications crowd, in case they start rioting and attacking the city council with tooth and claw. We also have Alex DeRosi, who's doing photos over there. We have Mercedes, who's the translator, and looks like a crowd of about 20 people.
Hey, Steve. I got food going on out there. I'm sorry about offending you, but I got food out there, and I got enough food. If you want to save your spot here, are you obsessed with obsessive-compulsive
He's got food. The question is, but I'm feeling a little ill.
You're so fucking self-absorbed. You idiot. Why don't you save me a spot?
He's always been this way with me, you dirty rat. Report. Ray, what went on at the county? You had a brief conversation with them. Did they embrace you? This is the Board of Supervisors, right?
Right.
And how did that go? It was one of your first appearances before the board, if not your first
appearance.
It was
my first appearance.
And what did you tell them, more or less?
I said that we had to keep in mind that these were 20-something-year-old, I should have said young people, but I said kids, and I said that they could be sitting in one of the Board of Supervisors seat one day.
And
there needed to be grace for this ridiculous lodging law, and I talked about Felix being in jail for 4 days for sleeping on the steps and not having an ID, and I said these aren't hardened criminals, they were just, you know, kids that were tired.
Sleeping without a permit now. So were you alone, and or were there others with you?
Well, we each spoke one at a time. I spoke as a credentialed elementary teacher, and just Ed spoke, I guess, as an attorney, and Joy spoke as a homeowner and mother, and who else spoke? Karen and Jeff spoke. I mean, Karen spoke. It was really great.
How
the whole range.
About five or six people spoke.
Oh, and Abby and Casey spoke. Abby talked about the fact that she had received the citation. More like eight, maybe.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well done.
It was good.
Yeah, it's about
Steve
Plage.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah, so it was very well rounded. But I think you should get Karen's take on it, because Karen was saying that it was so. I think you should ask Karen about
Karen
it.
Being, so we have the city council is assembling, and they're about to start.
And rather than play my tape of the city council's oral communications period, which was an interesting period, I won't, because it's online already. You can get it by going to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. You can hear speaker after speaker either denouncing or urging the city council to not attempt to repress and suppress Occupy Santa Cruz with this, I call it a phony permit requirement, which they have now supplemented with this injunction, which is going to ban the whole activity entirely, I suppose to punish them for not accepting the strictures in this permit. One of the big issues around this, or one of the most pertinent issues, because there were so many pictures of the poo-poo and pee-pee in the permit, like 5 pages of poo-poo, which they tried to link up, but they didn't have any real basis for linking it up with Occupy Santa Cruz, was, as I mentioned before, the fact that they've closed their own bathrooms in the park. They won't open them at night. And even the protesters themselves brought in a porta-potty, but that's not going to be enough for them. They want 3 porta-potties. They want people to abstain from going to the county bathrooms. They want to cut down the number of tents. They want everybody to agree to leave on the 16th of November. A whole series of requirements that violate the whole spirit of the protest, and claimed problems that aren't really there. And because, as I've also mentioned before, Lane, if he had any real problems and he was interested, anybody else who was interested in this issue from the city, could have gone directly to the Occupy Santa Cruz General Assembly and said, can anybody do something about this problem? And I'm sure they would have gotten a positive response. This is a very amenable group. They are interested in helping keep the area clean because they want to make a positive impact on the public. But that wasn't done at all. This is simply a negative attempt to shut down the protest. And I'm now going to take a brief musical break, and I'll come back, and we'll be hearing some more interviews from the last few days, as well as perhaps some words from Ed Fry on this injunction which is coming down. So stay tuned.
Rain, rain, go away. Give us sunshine and ERA. Very quickly then, a song by Eddie Grogan from Indianapolis Now. It's a song that quotes a famous three-word phrase that Susan B. Anthony uttered years ago. Do you know what that phrase is? All right. To try it. Failure is impossible. Victory's in sight. Failure is impossible. We will have equal rights. So shout it from the rooftops. Sing it in the streets. Failure is impossible. We'll not accept defeat. It took three generations from 1848 to the day when women finally won the suffrage debate. Now two more generations have gone and passed away, but we still lack liberation, and we don't have ERA. Join me. Failure is impossible. Victory's in sight. Failure is impossible. We will have equal rights. So shout it from the rooftops. Sing it in the streets. Failure is impossible. We'll not accept defeat. Oh, Susan B. Anthony is the mother of us all. An older sister fought for years. Her name was Alice Paul. Elizabeth Cady Stanton, an old soldier of truth. Lucretia Mott and Lucy Stone and Frederick Douglass knew. Try it. Failure is impossible. Victory's in sight. Failure is impossible. We will have equal rights. So shout it from the rooftop. Louder. Sing it in the street. Failure is impossible. We'll not accept defeat. We've lobbied and petitioned, we've picketed and fought, and fasted to gain the equal rights our bold our mothers sought. They were forced and beaten, and under it thrown in jail, but they persevered and carried on, they knew they would not fail. Sing it, failure is impossible, victory's in sight. Failure is impossible, we will have equal rights. So shout it from the rooftops, sing it in the streets. Failure is impossible, we'll not accept defeat. We're standing here together, a mighty method wrong. We'll walk shoulder to shoulder as we march along. We'll tell the legislators, we'll tell them loud and clear. Failure is impossible, ERA this year. Failure is impossible, victory's in sight. Failure is impossible, we will have equal rights. So shout it from the rooftop, sing it in the street. Failure is impossible, we'll not accept defeat. Once more, failure is impossible, victory's in sight. Failure is impossible, we will have equal rights. So shout it from the rooftop, sing it in the street. Failure is impossible, we'll not accept defeat.
And that was another one from Kristen Lem's old album, We Will Never Give Up. Of course, failure wasn't impossible. The ERA failed by three states in the early 80s. Still, the battle continues. I just listened to the end of the city council meeting in the afternoon when the city attorney gave his report on the litigation. And it could be that I cut off the tape before, I stopped my tape recorder before he finished speaking. But he doesn't mention anything at all about the emergency item that was added in a hasty manner to the closed session of the city council, which happens before the regular city council meeting, which the public has the right to attend, but only speak during a very brief open interval of that closed session. Then they go into this, they hunker down in secret and talk about supposedly litigation and personnel matters. But what was brought up on the emergency agenda, I found out from Catherine Byers, reluctantly, she told me, because I said, if it's on the agenda, we have the right to know what the agenda is, even if you don't, if you're not going to tell us what happened. It was an emergency item about this injunction, which apparently was kept under wraps so that the community did not know about it. If they did, they probably would have attended in mass this 1:30 closed session, which they have a right to attend briefly to comment on. And that's something this city council apparently didn't want. So it's another example of the slimy backdoor behind the scenes kind of process that happens at the Santa Cruz City Council. Here's some tape after the Tuesday City Council meeting. Again, the City Council meeting's oral communications period, this ghetto period where, you know, it was set up by the mayor off to the side to kind of essentially trivialize it and discourage people from coming. And the amount of time that was allowed was cut down to 2 minutes per person. He cut it down to 1 minute per person in this slight overtime period that was allowed briefly. Outrageously, because they don't need to do that. They have enough time to listen to people there if they want to. But, of course, why bother when you're not going to pay any attention to them anyway, I suppose, is in a way the common sense notion that they have, or the abusive common sense notion that they have that they shouldn't have, but they do. In any case, if you want to hear that, you can go online and you can see the excellent photographic and audio coverage of Alex DeRosa. You did a great story, as I said before, on the IndieBay.org, Santa Cruz Indie Media. And I think before I go any further, though, I want to try to get a hold of activist Ed Fry and see if we can see what... he has to tell us. He's been at the General Assembly of Occupy Santa Cruz tonight, and he was poring over this 100-page long injunction, which pretty hefty document to look through. And I
hello.
Hey, Ed Fry, you're on Free Radio.
Oh, hey, how you doing?
I'm good. You got a moment to speak?
Yes.
So, Ed, I've mentioned that there's this tome of more than 100 pages that you've been trying to make some sense out of, which the city apparently got today as an ex parte, in an ex parte hearing, that is, say, a hearing in court without opposition, without the other, I guess the other side, insofar as the other side is, I guess they you were told via Steve Plaich that this was happening. You weren't given any documents. Plaich himself was told, but he himself was actually served with this document as the only named party in the document, which sets a hearing for next Wednesday, as I understand it, and essentially demands that the entire... what's demanded in this document? Have they demanded that the entire encampment be removed as a public nuisance? What are they looking for?
That it be declared a public nuisance, and therefore the participants be enjoined from carrying it out. In other words, people will have to clear out of the park.
Now, is it the park or is it the county building as well?
Just the park. It's only by the city, so it's just the San Lorenzo Park.
And so it's not the county building, the courthouse area where the visual part of the protest that is signs and so forth, and the geodesic dome is in front of the courthouse. That isn't impacted by this?
Correct.
But that is impacted by the fact that I guess there have been repeated threats from the deputies and at least 8 either arrests or citations for 647E, the lodging law under which you yourself spent 2 weeks in jail and are now facing 6 months in jail if you lose your appeal, right?
Yeah, and there's a lot of campers who have moved from the city park area up to the lawn of the county courthouse. So they are subjected to that 647E lodging statute. Misdemeanor, yeah.
So what do you make of this? I mean, you decided not to go to this because you felt that you had the theory that this was an unincorporated group that they couldn't really enjoin because they weren't an association, something to that effect, which, by the way, I think others disagree with you on. Steve Plaich had a different theory. But what lies in store for Occupy Santa Cruz folks? What advice would you as an individual give them who has had some legal knowledge on these issues?
Well, a person is not subject really to contempt of court, which is what the punishment would be. It's the if you don't obey an injunction, that means you could be held in contempt of court. But the thing is that if you have not been served with papers, then legally you have had no notice of this action, so you can't really be held in contempt of court. Of course, the city is free at any time to come in and prosecute you criminally under their ordinances, camping ordinances, so-called, which, you know, they could do tonight. Who knows? You know, you never know when they will move on. I mean, this whole thing could be a ploy to have us relax for a while, since the hearing won't be until next Wednesday, and so that they could then come in tonight and move on us. I don't think they're going to, but they're always free at any time to take their enforcement action. Whether or not it's legal under the Constitution is another question, but they, of course, think it is, and, of course, these judges here are pretty much in their pockets.
Now, you spoke to the General Assembly, and you also heard the General Assembly's perspective tonight. That's the meeting that happens every night at 6 o'clock in front of the courthouse on Water Street. What kind of comments were made? What was the general sense, if anything, of the General Assembly?
Well, what we decided to do was to wait one day. There's the National Lawyers Guild was contacted today, or they contacted us. I'm not sure. They promised to send someone tomorrow. So are you still there?
I am.
Hello?
Still here, yes.
Okay. They promised to send someone tomorrow, the lawyer. So we thought, well, let's see what this other lawyer thinks, and then go from there. So we're going to have a meeting at 4:30 here, the General Assembly area, tomorrow, Friday. So anyone who's interested in the response and how we should respond to this injunction suit can come and take part in that meeting.
Now, an injunction, they kind of come in with it. They came in with this big, thick document, which I saw, a bunch of pictures. I didn't read the text of it. They claimed that a bunch of things were creating a public nuisance, as I understand it. Tell me if I'm wrong.
Sanitation issues, you know, they're always claiming that.
They shut the bathrooms, then they claim there's a sanitation problem. Yeah,
right,
that's the usual. Yeah, I was talking about that earlier.
That's,
you know,
government
it's,
logic for you.
It's pretty, it's transparently, you know, it's odious. It stinks. It's a shitty approach, as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, what I'm wondering is this hearing that will be held next Wednesday, this requires a preponderance of the evidence on the part of Occupy Santa Cruz folks to show that they're not a public nuisance. In other words, doesn't the court assume that the document presented, because it wasn't really contested or challenged with anything today, is in fact the case, and therefore those who they want to enjoin have to show that it's not the case by 51% of the evidence, right?
No, there was no finding today whatsoever. There was no adversary.
No, I mean on Wednesday, next Wednesday, they're going to have, that is, say,
no, the burden is on them. They're the plaintiff. They have to prove all the points that they made. But it's not going to be too difficult for them to do that, because the law says that it's a public nuisance to block any part of a public park. So, you know, pretty clearly they have the law on their side on that. The only defenses we'd have are constitutional, and they would say, well, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week is not necessary for people to exercise their First Amendment rights. Are you still there?
I am still here. It sounds like you're getting chilly out there, maybe?
I'm wandering around the county premises here, and I'm just wondering if I get good reception.
You're doing okay. I mean, it's a little weak, but I can still hear it. Have you been down to the campground much yourself? Because that's the area, of course, that is in question, right?
No, I haven't. I just come down here after work every day for these meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a while, I go over to the camp, but I haven't been down there lately.
You might want to check it out. It's gotten quite big, and it's very impressive. A lot of people are coming through. What was the spirit? How did people feel? How big was the General Assembly? Let me ask you that tonight.
Only average, you know.
40 or 50 people, or?
About 50 to 60, yeah.
And were the spirits high? Was it gloomy? What was the feeling? I know people last night were worried because the deputies had come and given these 647E notices to people saying, get out or you'll be charged with lodging. You know?
Oh, yeah. And by the way, on that, on the county's thing, Joel was here at the meeting earlier and gave an announcement that he'll be back at 9:30 tonight to discuss possible responses if the sheriff shows up tonight.
And Joel is an activist? Okay. Yeah, so folks are interested in being a part of that, they can come down at 9:30 to the courthouse site on Water Street.
Tonight, yes.
And 4:30 tomorrow is going to be a discussion of the injunction, possibly with somebody from the National Lawyers Guild who will finally come down. I keep calling these folks, and they just don't seem too interested.
Yeah. I don't even know whether the National Lawyers Guild still exists.
Well, apparently it does up north.
Keep hearing from them. What?
I've heard it does up north, but I mean, Santa Cruz has never had much National Lawyers Guild representation. Now, even ACLU, as you know, has been very utterly, you know, uninterested in local civil liberties interests issues,
yeah,
generally speaking, you know. So
yeah, we're just too far out in the country for them, I guess.
So, anything else come up at the General Assembly that you noticed that you think might be of interest in the general public?
Well, nothing other than what we've already talked about tonight.
Okay. Well, if there are any legals out there who want to consult with you or consort with you, Ed, I guess I can show up tomorrow at this meeting in front of the courthouse.
4:30 p.m. Yeah.
How's your case going? Your appeal of your own 647E conviction for sleeping in front of the courthouse.
Well, we're gathering all of our arguments and we're doing some more research and preparing the opening briefs. There's two briefs, one in my case, one in Gary Johnson's.
And when do those briefs go to court?
Within a month. The official due date is Monday for Gary's, but if we don't file it, then they give us a notice, say, okay, do it by within 30 days or we dismiss the appeal.
Uh-huh.
So naturally we'll do it within that 30-day period, if not sooner.
Well, you are, of course, a rather serious sleep criminal, you know, there, Ed. So we don't want to make sure you don't leave the jurisdiction. After all, you did have a $50,000 bail. No, wait, it was reduced to $110,000, wasn't it?
Yeah, the original amount was $50,000 bail, and the judge's good judgment, that was the fair amount of bail. But then he had second thoughts and reduced it to $110,000.
Wasn't that what the bail schedule recommended, was $110?
Yeah.
So apparently he either didn't read the bail schedule or he felt it was important to teach you a good lesson, Ed.
Well, he probably did, but especially when I stood up and I said to him right in open court, I said, you should be ashamed of yourself.
You don't want judges don't like feeling ashamed of themselves, at least not until they go before, shall we say, international courts for war crimes and things like that.
Yeah. Well, as far as I'm concerned, this is a crime against poor people and a serious crime against poor. It's attacking their health.
I tend to agree with you, Ed, as you know. Anything else you want to suggest or anything you want to put out to people that they can do to be helpful?
Come to the General Assembly meetings. It's every day at 6 p.m., except Sunday at 2 p.m., right here at the County Courthouse on Water Street side, and take part and contribute whatever what you can to this movement, because this is, to me, I've been around a long time, and this is the most promising political movement I've seen in my lifetime.
Yeah, it's quite something. I agree with you. You know, also people can come actually at any time since folks are there 24 hours a day, and they can kind of volunteer to help, get more information about what's going on, talk to people about it. There are 15 or so working committees, right, working groups that are working on different aspects of this this protest, right?
Right.
Well,
yeah. Okay, Robert, I got to go.
You better get going there, Ed.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for answering.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Bye-bye. And phone lines are open, 427-3772. That was activist Ed Fry, who also has the distinction or the albatross of a law degree, which tends to make people expect things of him, which often I don't think he, you know, really, I don't want to say he isn't able to do them, but, you know, they're not really his forte. I mean, he's a guy who kind of is a sort of a straight constitutionalist kind of arguer. He talks about the Constitution a lot. Isn't too much into all the statutes and laws. Anyway, let's continue with some of this I was able to go forward to find the... these are discussions that happened after the Tuesday City Council meeting when, I guess, Channel 46 called me aside because they wanted to talk about why did I make a mock Nazi salute to Mayor Coonerty when he threatened to, when he told police officers to remove somebody from the chamber to seek him out and take him out of the chambers if he... either if he repeated himself, or I think it was even before that. But in any case, it was a threat to the police action because of something somebody said from the audience, which I found outrageous. And I said so. I was also warned, and again, nobody arrested me at that point, and then I went up and made this mock Nazi salute. After that, there was this discussion outside, both with the media and then with Vice Mayor Don Lane.
Last name and how to spell it.
Sure, I'm Robert Norse, N-O-R-S-E.
You want to
okay.
ride, Rick?
And Robert, what was the deal with the Nazi salute?
The city council has spent over $150,000 having falsely arrested me for doing this because of their determination to shut down audience comment, even when it's not disruptive. I mean, you'll get an occasional catcall from the audience, an expression of opinion by people who are infuriated having only 1 minute to speak while Vice Mayor Lane goes on and on and on, when he did indeed attend the General Assembly last night, but said absolutely nothing. His great sincere desire to negotiate apparently didn't show itself there, only when he is talking to the community as an attempt to cover the city council's, I think, repressive actions.
You currently have a court case going against the city. Could
yes,
you
sued
tell me?
Three mayors where they're due in court in the next 6 months in San Jose to answer for their false arrest for doing what Mayor Coonerty is now threatening regularly to do, which is to arrest people for allegedly disrupting a meeting, essentially doing something he doesn't like. Disruption of a meeting means you stop the meeting from proceeding. What I did there with this mock Nazi salute, which really means you're acting like a bunch of fascists, don't act that way. It's a form of, you know, ironic and rather angry ironic commentary about what they're doing. But, you know, they're choosing to spend huge amounts of money, but worse than that, they're continuing their process of repressing people who are just expressing their opinion in the very limited forum that Coonerty allows. The mayor has put this oral communications period off into a 5 o'clock session. Normally it was at the beginning, and you may remember the meetings where actually the whole community could be part of the process. Now it's in this kind of doghouse, ghettoized area. He's reduced it to 2 minutes, then to 1 minute. I think it's abusive and infuriating, and really an example of what Occupy Santa Cruz and other groups are fighting. Forgive me.
It was fine. Is this the first time that you've done that Nazi salute since you originally did it?
No. I mean, but it's...
Are you regularly doing it at meetings?
No, I don't. It's only then when I really feel that there is a truly repressive action that needs to be dramatized, because a lot of people find it very offensive, you know. And it's both kind of pointless to do it repeatedly. It loses its impact. You should do it when there's a clear point to be made. And I thought at this point there was. He was threatening to arrest someone for asking that bathrooms be open after the city's claim for the reason for the permit is because of feces in the park. I mean, it's so transparently an excuse to close down this campground without really paying any attention that the attempt to arrest someone for raising that issue from the audience, I think, is a form of repression with four police officers in the back that is... I don't want to say, well, I will. You know, it's Gestapo-like. It is, it's an abuse of the police power, an abuse of the city council, and it discourages people from being at these meetings and being a part of the political process.
When you do that salute, do you realize and are you sensitive to the fact that you are offending a whole lot of people?
I think it is more important to express the message clearly and do so in a way that... I think it's visually dramatic, and I think it may offend some people, but I think it may also be understandable to others as a kind of message. In fact, I found that over the years. This was originally happened in 2002 when I did that at city council and was arrested for not leaving after he told me to leave. I just sat down. I wasn't disruptive. It's a matter of free speech.
So what was the legal terms for which you were suing the city?
False arrest. I was held in jail and in handcuffs.
And what court is it in right now?
It's going back to San Jose Federal Court. It was the city tried to get it
it was an en banc panel of the Federal Appeals Court found that I had the right to a trial. The city continues to spend city money to try to stop me from suing them, but they are going to be forced to go to court.
And what court? What's the level again?
It's federal court in San Jose.
Okay. Okay. All right. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Occupy San Jose.
Yeah, I know. We'll probably head over there.
All right.
I got an email that showed me what the permit was.
And we have Don Lane coming up, but first, a member of the community, perhaps. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, Robert, it's Ed Natal.
Hey, Ed.
Hey, I got a question for you. If somebody is speaking at a council meeting and people in the audience start yelling over them, is that or is that not disruptive?
It depends on whether it's done with sufficient persistence to actually stop the business at hand. I mean, it certainly could be, for sure.
Okay, because I listened to the tape because you know I heard it online. I was like, oh God, here we go again. And I wanted to make sure. So I listened to the tape, and I would have to say, in my opinion, you were disruptive.
Well, I wasn't actually doing anything.
At one point, you were the first one to yell, open the restroom.
At one point, I said, open the restrooms.
When Don Lane was talking.
If three words, open the restrooms, can be construed as stopping the meeting, then I was disruptive. I don't think it was.
Yeah, but somebody else picked it up, and then a third person.
Well, you know, if it then becomes that kind of a process, it's appropriate for the chair to say, I'd like to be able to speak. And that actually has been done by former mayors. Wait a minute.
Well, isn't that what Ryan said? If they keep interrupting, the police should escort them out.
You don't have to bring the police into anything unless I think you want to act like a fascist. I don't think it's appropriate.
So there you go, throwing fascists. It's all Nazis.
I think using police...
You're like a 12-year-old calling people names.
Hang on, Ed. I think using the police to repress comments like that at city council is fascistic. That's just my view. I mean, you disagree with me. I appreciate that, but that's my view.
Okay, and then also got another thing about the not anywhere and everywhere but somewhere.
Yes, sleeping not anywhere and everywhere but somewhere.
Yes, that is the catchphrase.
Yeah.
If you do not allow any rules to be assigned to the people camping, does that not mean just anywhere?
Well, you know, we're talking about a very specific place. We're talking about, you know, the San Lorenzo Benchlands. But when I use that phrase, by the way, I was using it a year ago when we were actually looking for the city to suspend the camping ban or the sleeping sections of the camping ban in certain parts of the city, specifically setting up campgrounds. I mean, that's what it was in reference to. But I would, you know, I'm not going to back down from the notion that this should be applied in the current situation. And in the current situation, I think things have actually altered so that you have a sufficiently strong movement of people together, both homeless and non-homeless, that you have a potential community that can actually address this issue more effectively than any of the social service agencies, which is what I've talked about earlier in the show. And by the way, Ed, I appreciate your calling in and you're being honest about who you are. And you're a critic of mine, strong critic online.
I'm not critical of everything, but just, you know, I gotta call it when I see it.
For sure.
And so I just wondered about that because I did post on the on your the Snoppy Salute, and it wasn't a mock one because you did it right on this time. But I noticed that my comment has been scrubbed.
I don't do any of that. I recommend that they not do that.
I know it's not your fault, but
yeah,
anybody is like Fox News. If you don't say what you want them, what they want you to say.
Well, if you can get the Sentinel to do a story on it, they will probably not cut off, you know, topics will not do that, you know, but then you'll get a lot of other crap on topics.
Well,
which
yeah, but
topic.
At least everybody, if you could wade through the garbage, you know.
We're trying. Signal, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
The signal's familiar on topics, and it's now even worse because there's nobody coming in. It's just the same group of idiots.
Yeah, that often happens, parking. You know, with blogs. You get the same group of people. I mean, it'll probably happen with, we're trying to set up a blog on the Huff website, which we haven't done yet, in which we're going to have comments concealed but not censored. So if we think that somebody's comments are too personal or abusive, or we can conceal them, but you can always find them. That's what I'd like to see happen. I think that's...
Yeah, if there was a show hidden, that would definitely...
Yeah, something like that.
I would definitely support something.
Yeah, I'm pretty broad in my belief, libertarianism in that regard. Let me give you a chance to sum up, because I want to play a little of this while I can in the last 10 minutes.
Okay. No problem. Actually, the sharks are on, so that's my next priority here. I work for the county, and I'd really like them to go somewhere, anywhere, but not everywhere.
Okay.
Yeah, because I've seen people peeing and pooing in the river. Unfortunately, my cell phone camera isn't good enough to catch it to show proof, and by the time I get back around the other side of the river, they've disappeared into the camp.
I'm not saying you're not telling the truth.
Yeah, I saw that online. Somebody said, "Well, you trust the Sentinel." It wasn't you saying this.
Was this during the night or during the day?
It was 4:30 in the afternoon.
That doesn't sound good. Bathrooms are still open, right?
Yeah, county building, the thing, the parks restroom. And I posted on the article where I said, "By the way, guy, if you're down there peeing in the river, everybody on the other bank can look at you."
How many times have you seen this, Ed?
I have seen it probably once a week now.
Okay.
And the park's getting beat to hell. And, it's just, at least here in Santa Cruz, I'm getting by suddenly beat you with pipes.
Say that again. I didn't hear that. I'm sorry.
Wasn't on Monday somebody got beat with a pipe in the camp?
There was an attack on Sunday night, a misunderstanding in a campground that resulted in a guy getting beaten up, but he's still there, and I think, I'm not sure what's happened with that. But it does happen. There are, occasional, I would say...
Well, better than what happened in Oakland tonight, and Vermont.
I missed what happened in Oakland tonight.
In Vermont you had a suicide, and in Oakland it looked like there was a murder at the camp.
Oh, that's too bad. I'm sorry, Oakland is a murderous town, and that can happen in a large area. And I think that there's far less of that happening in this concentrated area than there would be if all these people were spread out. But that's that's just my perception. You probably see it differently,
well,
I imagine. So.
Well, no, I don't see at this point. I'm not even sure that if half the reports are saying people were in the camp when the shooting started, half of them saying it's out, but it was very close. I mean, look at Occupy Santa Cruz. The very first day they're in the park, somebody gets punched.
Somebody gets what?
Remember the very first day in the park, that woman got punched, the firefighter from San Jose?
No, but I believe you. I didn't hear that.
Okay, it's on, there's video of it. And then while the firefighter is holding this woman that punched her, this guy from Occupy comes off and pushes her off and says, "No cops," and the person that punched her runs off. And I'm just like, yikes.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good. And that kind of started me right off the bat. Because here's the thing. I actually agree that the system is currently broken, that Citizens United was a travesty. And it's just that I don't know if sitting around in a park 24/7 is the way to go. How many, I don't know if you would know, but how many people there are registered? What's the percentage of registered voters?
That I don't know, but let me ask you, I was asking you to sum up, and I'm going to have to roll, but...
I'm sorry.
I understand. If you'd like to, call in again on Sunday morning when I'll have more time.
Well, if I can, Sunday is family day. So,
no problem.
So I'll let you go, play the rest of your tape, and I'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Ed.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. Here's again getting back to Tuesday night after the city council meeting. The next voice you'll hear will be that of Don Lane, the vice mayor.
No, I think right when it went out. But right on the same day.
The issue is that
the city council, you're the boss of the speaker, so stuff.
Do you favor the terms of this permit? I mean, that's what I wanted to know.
And that's me asking Don Lane if he favors the terms of the permit. Also, they're talking is. Steve Argue, who is an activist who spoke in favor of the campground. He's a strong socialist who wants to see some radical changes in the system and has been a long fighter for civil rights and against police abuse in Santa Cruz for a decade.
You need to talk to each other.
Hey, you favor the permit, Don. Don, wait a minute, Don. You're not answering? You favor the permit. You favor the conditions in the permit.
I do.
Okay, well, that's candid of you. I appreciate your honesty. We don't. There's a real disagreement. And yet you want to negotiate? Are you willing to negotiate the conditions
so
in the permit?
What do you want to negotiate in favor of these draconian...
Yeah, I don't know. That was what I thought.
There's nothing to negotiate.
See, I just
you're going to set out the cops, and we're going to have a...
The person who's interjecting as Steve Argue feels there's nothing to negotiate, that the permit sucks, which I agree with, but I'm trying to get Lane on record, which it's a little difficult to do in a situation where everybody wants to talk.
Demonstration on November 16th. We're not going to be shut down. It's our First Amendment right.
He doesn't seem to want to talk about it.
Yes, he does.
See what Don says to the media, shall we? Don is now speaking to the media.
Okay. Are you going to talk, Sergeant Hines? We need you.
He's awesome. I love this guy.
I talk all the time. You actually feel a little under the weather.
If you talk more and arrested less, I would be really happy.
Stress honor for Manhunt Mondays.
Really?
You might see that.
I'm just gonna record what he says. I'm not gonna interrupt you. Go ahead.
Wow, that's great. Sorry.
Yeah, that's great.
So Don Lane is now being interviewed by KSBW 8.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, that's right.
Can we just start with your first and last name and how to spell it?
Don Lane, L-A-N-E.
Okay. Don, I guess what is the city's official position on this Occupy movement? Is there a position?
There is. No, the city doesn't have any official position on the Occupy movement.
Okay. What are your personal feelings?
I'm pretty supportive of it. I like the issues that it's raising about income inequality and the influence of corporations on our political system, their undue influence on our system. Those are important issues to me.
The city, it sounds like they're gonna ask these people to move on the 16th. Why is that?
Well,
before he answers, of course, the idea that Don is a supporter of the Occupy movement but wants to eliminate the occupation is a kind of an interesting contradiction. He wouldn't say he was trying to eliminate the occupation. He would say he's trying to restrict it within very specific guidelines as laid down by the permit proposed by Martine Bernal, and you can find that permit in the Sentinel. As far as I can see, it's very repressive. Although Lane has said that he would agree to try to have it extended if everybody kept within the four corners of the permit, I guess there is a feeling among the occupiers that this is an excuse to eliminate the protest rather than a really legitimate set of health and safety concerns, based on the fact that these concerns have not been brought to the attention of the group by these negotiators, by Lane, for example, who, if he feels that way, should have brought the issue to the General Assembly, but wasn't interested in doing so. Was interested instead in laying down the law, as he saw it, or having the city manager do it for him, and now having the city attorney take it into court.
Because the park is really getting damaged quite severely. There's a lot of trouble. You know, I think you heard some descriptions of kind of the things that the parks workers are finding.
The only thing they're talking, he's using the poo-poo, playing the poo-poo card. The damage has not been specified clearly. We asked him to provide some public documentation of that, and he said, oh, you challenged my word. That was his comment the day before. So I have yet to look at the injunction request document, which may have some more specifics about the alleged damage. And it's obviously taking some significant use. But I guess I favor this, even if it's an extraordinary use. But I have yet to see real documentation about real damage. And Lane didn't present that either on the Monday or the Tuesday that this city council meeting and this subsequent discussion is happening.
Park that are really unpleasant. It's our parks workers who took those photographs, and that's what they encounter every day when they try to keep the park up. So it's
the poo-poo that the poor park people have to face. This, again, it's the poo-poo card.
It's a problem.
Could you say specifically what they're finding?
They're finding feces and a lot of trash, and they're finding damage to the landscape of the park.
Okay. You saw Mr. Norse do that Nazi salute. What's your impression when he does that in the council chambers?
I just shrug.
Okay, we have Steve Plaich on the line. We're going to cut into this recording. Hi, Steve.
How are you?
Good. We had an interview with Ed Fry and his perspective on things. You yourself have a somewhat different perspective. You actually have been working on an injunction yourself on the other side of this coin to stop potential harassment of the protest in the campground. Let me ask you, first of all, how that's going.
Well, it's going well. As you yourself know and have seen the papers, I think we've got what we really need, if we can get some legal representation to take it into court, to give us at least a fighting chance to have 647E barred from enforcement. and that'll leave our campers be, particularly in the county property.
Now, Ed was saying that they're having a meeting tomorrow at 4:30 to discuss different alternatives. Maybe have a National Lawyers Guild worker or lawyer or legal guy come to town if that happens. Maybe you will show up. I'm not sure. You've expressed some ambivalence, but with all the abusive commentary the guys like me are giving you on the radio and elsewhere. Well, I must admit you've seemed pretty sanguine about it all, which I find quite admirable, actually.
Well, I'm interested in having my day in court, as you have often yourself enjoyed, and I'm going to defend myself to the fullest extent of the law. It was kind of an interesting GA. I mean, we just explained the basics of the preliminary injunction and what the city was asking the court to do, basically to find that the San Lorenzo Park occupation was a public nuisance, and if they find that it's a public nuisance, then they'll command us, Occupy Santa Cruz and myself personally, to abate that nuisance. And of course, the complexity of that is if we fail to comply with that and then the city goes in and spends tens of thousands of dollars to abate the nuisance, then we are all liable in monetary damage.
So you got deep pockets, do you, Steve?
I wish I had a rich or a Dutch uncle.
I believe you are one of the few activists who lives in their vehicle at the moment.
I do, indeed. In fact, I am vehiculally housed.
Indeed. Watch out. The county may come after you for violating their habitation ordinance.
But anyway, I guess at some point during the GA, one of the women spoke up and said that there was a National Lawyers Guild attorney that's coming down from San Francisco tomorrow at some point. I strongly advise the GA to seek legal representation and have somebody on hand who could explain the effect of the injunction and what ways they might be able to defend against it, because I do think there are some ways they can defend against it, but they really need somebody who understands injunctions, who understands how to defend successfully against them, and for that they really need to reach out and find somebody representing.
Well, you'll be filing your own papers by next Tuesday, which is the deadline for that Wednesday hearing, right?
Absolutely. I'll be filing my opposition no later than Tuesday. I'll probably work on it over the weekend and perhaps even file it on Monday morning.
And what time and what court is that hearing going to be heard in?
That'll be in Department 4 at 8:30, I think, 8:15 or 8:30, before Judge Volkman.
If you're around later, I have a thing or two to say to you. If you want to talk, I'll give you a call immediately after we're off the air, if you're still available.
I probably will be.
All right. I'd like to give you more time. In fact, I will until Dennis shows up. There are no criminal aspect to this. People are not facing the possibility of being arrested if they, should we say, stay on the property or...
No, this is, not under the terms of this particular complaint. This is a civil complaint. So there are no criminal aspects to it at all.
Now, what about the idea that how are they going to tell who is actually a part of Occupy Santa Cruz and who is not? I mean, are they just going to go from person to person down in the campground saying, what's your name? And if the person doesn't tell their name, they're not going to be able to really serve them in any meaningful way?
I think it's a fair question, but certainly there's a low-hanging fruit, and that is the people who have made public statements in support of Occupy, and those people are well-known. I think also they probably will be able to take all the photographic evidence they have of marches and things of that nature and kind of match up faces to people who are known in the community. And I can't imagine that if it ever came to it, anybody would testify under oath when asked the question, are you a member of Occupy Santa Cruz, that they would say no.
Well, a lot of the people in the campground down there actually are just sort of peripheral, and they're the ones that I think that the city's trying to eliminate. Wouldn't it be possible for such a person, if some snoopy bureaucrat or subpoena server comes around, to just zip up their tent and refuse to pay any attention to them?
Well, I suppose that they could, and there are some people who really are not part of Occupy Santa Cruz. However, they are part of the public nuisance. And so, I don't think that really creates any liability on their part. For instance, the homeless folks that are down there are clearly not members of Occupy Santa Cruz because, suggested they might want to join because, as you know, there's a lot of crossover, I think, between homelessness and that issue, the human rights and civil liberties issue.
For sure.
And that's why we like to have the homeless down there, and we have invited them to join us, and we have always been inclusive with that respect. But
as a technical matter,
they would not be liable for damages because they are not members of Occupy Santa Cruz.
I think probably it's the city officials, I think, that are the real public nuisance here. But
maybe it's Robert Norris.
Oh, dear. Uncle Dennis has now entered the studio with his 101.3 is our new location.
Steve, wait a minute. Will we be going from the Cream?
Pretty. We'll be going from. We are going from the Norris to the Dennis. It is true. I have to admit. I will be wandering by Joe's Pizza in about 20 minutes. Are you going to be around?
I could make myself available.
That sounds good.
As long as you give my warmest personal regards to Uncle Dennis.
Well, I'm afraid that he's heard them whether I like it or not.
Okay. I'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Steve. And that's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides tonight. Uncle Dennis is in the studio on the new and improved 101.3. We have a new and improved combination, so all you non-paying radio broadcasters are not going to be able to get into our studio. We've locked you out. Ha ha! We are the 1%. So there.
Well, Robert, it's do-it-yourself radio, which means we have to pay the bills ourselves.
Oh, Uncle Dennis, always the voice of sanity and bringing my flights of fancy down to earth.
Your trust fund to
what trust fund? Well, we won't get into that, I guess.
We wouldn't have to. You know.
Yes, yes. If I bring my stocks and bonds and all my investments, I can only bring them all in. It'll be, you know how it is. I'd like to help, but I have too many investments. And in any case, I will be back on Sunday morning, 9:30, or perhaps before, depending on whether Thomas Levitt of the wake-up call wakes up and gets down to the studio.
Unfortunately, has had his show
suspended. He's been locked out of the studio. Thomas, I'm afraid you may find your show, usurped by Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
All you have to do is pay.
Yes, indeed. Well, Uncle Dennis.